Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And if our energy is a little bit on the lower side today, that is because last night we launched Queer News.
Well, I mean, really the energy is low because we're hungover.
Yeah.
But the hangover is due to the launch.
I think it has more due to the tequila, but that's...
Hey, don't blame tequila for your own bad decisions.
Yeah, the bad decision
tequila
in this case
is innocent being... in this discussion.
Yes, innocent until taken. You know, it was we launched Queer News, www.queer.news, and it is an effort for us to get local writers, local voices in communities such as yours, to share with us the stories of what's happening in their communities, because. Our regular listeners know, you know, we cover a lot of news that happens. We try and get as much Canadian content as possible. But the struggle is that there isn't that many people telling those Canadian stories.
Yeah, it can be kind of challenging for us sometimes to find the stories. Or what we'll do is we'll find a summary of, like, you know, these are events that happened back in the summer. And it is around Christmas time or something like that. And it's... You know, after an event has happened and it's died down, we can sometimes find follow-up articles from local newspapers or what have you, saying, like, what is the result of this thing that happened over the summer? And the two of us are sitting there like, what? What? What is this? What happened? And then it, you know, half the time we're just two emails away from figuring it out, but it's, you gotta know the story exists in the first place, so.
Yeah, and we don't know everything, despite popular belief. And that's really where Queer News comes in. It's about getting local people to write their own stories of what's happening. These are paid gigs, if anyone's interested. And then we share those with the national audience. And the idea being, if this is something that is of interest to you, and we actually will be touching on some of the stories that we made public this year, this week, in today's episode... But the idea that, you know, folks will subscribe, that money goes to pay local writers, and you get the news straight to your inbox. So, pretty simple concept, but fingers crossed, people like it. www.queer.news. So, our first subject.
Our first story.
I thought, nice and easy.
Yeah, earlier you just told me about cuddling, and now I'm looking at the title of this thing, and I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So, we're looking at... Queerty has an article under its Cuddle Puddles. Why straight guys are seeking groups where they can cuddle other men. And it's... And this article is not, like, on its own here. I've seen it over the past few weeks. Lots of different stories about men coming together and just cuddling.
Mm-hmm.
There is no sexual touching.
Okay.
No nudity. They're all fully clothed.
You know, I think...
They're just having a good old snuggle.
A lot of people probably view this as some kind of radical modern sexuality. And I don't know, maybe it is. But it makes me think of the old silver plate photographs of cowboys from the Wild West. And it'll be like, you know, this is Tom Jenkins and his neighbor who found an oil patch together, and they'll be like sitting on each other's laps. Or it'll be like, you know, this is some frontiersman and the Ojibwe man that he traveled with, and they'd be like arm in arm kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where it's, I think it's more that we're returning to something that World War One and Two basically traumatized whole generations of men, followed by the 60s and 70s. There's fun data that shows that the reason why, if you watch old movies that take place in Times Square, New York, mm-hmm. in the early 80s, it was like this violent, criminal-infested pee-hole kind of not great place to be in. And there's actually a lot of data showing that that whole generation was affected by lead poisoning. Because of contamination in lead paint and lead paint that was in children's toys. And then they grew up and it was an entire generation with heavy metal poisoning, which makes people violent and irrational. And it can go away on its own, which would be the decline of violence through the 90s. So it's really weird data. But anyway, point is, World War One, World War Two, an entire generation affected by heavy metal poisoning. And now what's happening
Well, how does this connect to cuddling?
This connects to cuddling because masculinity is no longer inherently traumatized. Mm. And it's no longer inherently traumatizing. So all these old Victorian photos of, like, you know, British gentlemen, and you get these photographs of, like, you know, fishers in rural India, and you get all these, like, old photos from the 1800s. And men are arm in arm, they're sitting on each other's laps, they're cuddling with each other, and it was because physical space was not, like, it was a different thing, and it was considered, like, just what friends do, that they become physically close like that. And it's not always sexualized.
Yeah. I forget if it's in India or Pakistan, but men who are friends, who aren't gay, walk around and hold each other's hands. What I thought was really interesting about this is, you know, there is a conversation happening about men being more intimate with each other.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of stuff, you know, way back when you're talking about things like boys don't cry,
yeah,
they don't have emotions, we don't talk about stuff like that. Well, that's a very dated approach. You know,
it is,
boys
yeah
are allowed to cry and have emotion.
Well, the, like, as I said, like, if you reach back even further, you can find a lot of text from...
But it went
a lot
the
of,
other way.
Yeah, yeah, where it was... You know, it was more like the Vulcan approach, if you're familiar with your classic Star Trek, that it's not that men, you know, men shouldn't cry, but men have very intense feelings, and it's to their own benefit to learn how to keep them under control. Not so much keep them under lids because real men don't have emotions, but rather that real men, quote-unquote real men, have intense emotions, and you don't want to, like, you need that sober second thought. Because, you know, there's always those episodes of where the Vulcan gets drunk or whatever, and then he's just like, rah! And he goes crazy, and he's either boisterous or violent or whatever. And that's before the Victorian era. That was the sort of masculine archetype. And you see that in sort of, like, machismo culture.
Mm.
And this sort of, like, and machismo culture is a stereotype, so let's be very clear. We're talking about culturally enforced stereotypes. That's the backbone of machismo, but... The idea behind it is that men have powerful, intense emotions, and that it's about expressing it or repressing it according to whatever is appropriate of the context, because...
Well,
yeah.
I like the idea. I don't know if, personally, I'm going to get in with a cuddle pile. I don't really want other people touching me. It's like, no. My mother actually hates massage therapies. She's like... I don't want somebody else to touch me. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this? But there is a lot to be said about, you know, human touch.
Yes.
And let's look at the facts here. Men have the astonishing rate of suicide ideation.
Yeah.
You know, male loneliness is a major, major issue that in part contributes to the suicide ideation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having community, camaraderie... you know, some men see that in going to the pub, or
yeah,
less so these days. Some men get
yeah
that male connection by watching the football games, or they go fishing with their buddies, or what have you. And I think that maybe these cuddle groups
mm-hmm
is a very different solution. But I think maybe it's another solution to providing an opportunity for men to be intimate with each other.
I still think it's... I mean, this is more of a return to an older solution because, okay, this is going to sound weird, especially coming from an LGBT podcast and radio show, I guess. I'm in a weird position where I have the backwards feeling for most people where I don't have much respect for faith, but I do have respect for religion. Religion in the form that it can organize people and that it can connect you to the past and connect you with other people. I think religion is a tool that can be easily abused. But anyway, the Franciscan monks, the whole idea behind the monasteries is you take all these men that have no purpose and no direction and nowhere to go and they're isolated and lonely. You go to a monastery and then you have a family now.
Mm-hmm.
You just show up, you know, vow of poverty, vow of modesty. Bang, you've got a family, they care about you, physical closeness, all sorts of stories about what the Franciscan monks used to be like around each other.
They make amazing cheese.
And wine, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's And brandy, actually. That was the French. Ooh. Franciscan monks were known for that, for brandy. So, I mean, it's...
I mean, how can you not have a great time? Cheese, wine, brandy.
Watermelons.
Building full of great-looking other men. I mean, for me, that sounds like a great trip.
I think it's more that we're rediscovering old solutions.
Mm.
I think it's... Well, modern versions of old solutions, but I really do think we're just rediscovering old solutions.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I know that... You know, we're getting to a point now where loneliness is a crisis.
Yeah.
In the UK, they consider loneliness to be a major health issue.
Yeah.
And social isolation is one of the things that they're looking to address. I do believe that all of the conversation around cuddle puddles, where men all just get in a great big... It's like a giant, like, six-year-old sleepover, where everyone's just, like, all snuggling up. And for me, I think it sounds adorable. But maybe it really does speak to us reinventing ways of addressing that fundamental issue that people don't really like being alone.
No, yeah.
And these cuddle puddles may well be one of the solutions.
Yeah. So well, I mean, I think there was that horrible period in the early 2000s where the idiots on unscripted reality TV somehow became a model for behavior. And you'd have, like, all these people on Survivor or Big Brother or whatever, and they're like, I don't need anyone. I do what I want. I'm my own person. I didn't come here to make friends. I came here to win. You get all that garbage. And it was... I remember when you could tell somebody used to watch that kind of show, because all of a sudden they became very cold and hostile towards everyone around them, and they were like, I'm so independent now. I mean, that's great, but nobody's going to invite you to any parties anymore.
And that's exactly it.
Yeah.
You know, it's about having that connection with other humans. Well, we're going to jump to our first song. This is Closer by Tegan and Sarah. And when we get back, we'll be talking about what has been a very monumental decision in trans rights out of BC just after this.
A little bit closer. All I want to know is, can you come a little closer? Here comes the breath. Make come a little closer.
And welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I wanted to share with folks today a decision that was made by the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal, the BCHRT.
HRT.
I don't know why they're from the West Country now, but there we go. That's what happens. So in 2017, Morgana Gere, who is a trans advocate in Vancouver, is trans-identified.
Okay.
Or identifies as a woman, but for the sake of this whole conversation, is trans.
Yes.
So Margaret was running for the seat in Vancouver False Creek riding in the election for the NDP.
I remember this story. I just copy-edited the article for... What's that website again?
www.queer.news.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see. Okay, absolutely. Cool. Go on.
I appreciate the shameless plug. So, for our listeners' sake, in 2017, Morgana Gere, openly trans, runs for office. Could have been, bit of a spoiler alert, could have been the first openly trans MP in Canadian history.
Okay.
However... lost the election by 400 votes.
Oh.
It was incredibly close.
Oh.
Unbelievably close. Now, there is no evidence whether or not the hate flyers that were distributed in the riding had an impact, but it does beg the question. So what I'm referring to here is Morgana Gere, during this election in 2017, had the unscrupulous honor of being targeted by everyone's favorite, and I quote here, jihadist for Jesus, is how he's described himself.
Okay.
You know, I'm referring here to William Walcott or Bill Walcott. Now, we actually had a run-in with Bill Walcott.
Ourselves. Did
we? Not with him directly, but when he was fighting his Supreme Court of Canada case, where he was challenging the Saskatchewan human rights legislation.
Okay.
He came to Ottawa to fight the case at the Supreme Court. This is way back.
Is he the guy who's flyering at Carleton U?
Yeah.
So and the campus went into lockdown?
Yeah. So this guy was was handing out hate flyers at Carleton University whilst he was, like, you know, in recess from fighting a Supreme Court case.
This was during my second week of my PhD.
For distributing hate pamphlets.
Yeah.
That was the court case he was fighting.
Yeah.
And then in his spare time was distributing hate pamphlets at Carleton. You're right, the whole university shut down.
Yeah.
Security was called in. It was a whole thing. So this guy, Bill Walcott, who, even though he has been told off multiple times by various authorities to not distribute hate pamphlets.
I'm pretty sure the presiding judge officially declared him to be a poopy head.
Yeah, yeah. We're not quoting directly here, but him being a dick is quite...
I also did not say which judge, so I mean, it could technically be true.
So anyway, during the election in 2017, Bill Walcott put up 1,500 flyers specifically in the riding of Morgana Gere.
Yeah.
Now, these flyers had things like, you know, I'm not going to say... The flyers only really referred to Morgana Gere with her birth name.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's so fundamentally insulting off the bat. You know, it's not their name. That's not how they identify.
Yeah.
You know, just for folks listening, it's like being married and constantly... it's so much more than that. But an example people may identify with is being married and being constantly misnamed with your previous name, as whatever that may be.
Maiden name.
Maiden name.
That's the term you're looking for.
So not only did he put 1,500 copies up, they were truly vile pamphlets. We're not going to really go into the content of them.
Well, I'm not going to quote it directly, but I mean, it's one of those things where when I first came across this story, I remember thinking, like, if it were... Because he defended himself by saying he had the right to contribute to the marketplace of ideas. And, you know, superficially, absolutely, fair enough. But if the flyers were saying, don't vote for this person, they have bad policy, I would have been like, you know, mean but fair. But there was no mention of policy, no mention of platform, no mention of don't vote for this person, they're a filthy liberal or anything like that. It was just like, don't vote for this person.
They are trans.
Yeah.
Oh, they're lying. They're actually a man.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the gist of it.
Yeah, and it was like, that's, you're contributing nothing.
There's no reasonable conversation happening here.
Yeah.
Now, Walcott and his cabal.
Cabal?
That's, I couldn't think of the right word. And I'm like...
His troop?
Yes. His entourage in the human rights case argued that Miss Auger was pretending to be a woman.
Okay.
And that her pretending to be a woman... is very significant because it speaks to her character.
Okay.
In all of these cases, Walcott and his entire team refer to Miss Auger as a male.
Okay.
Consistently. They refer to Clinton, Trump, Roy Moore, and David Duke. So, Philandra and many degrees of racists. And essentially said, you know, their private lives have been important in politics. Ergo, Morgan Auger's private life is important.
Although I would argue that none of their private lives were important either.
Well, you know, you're looking at Trump and the Hollywood access tape with the grab them by the...
But that wasn't a private life issue. That was him in the spotlight as an entertainer.
Okay, well, paying off porn stars is a... Okay, there we go.
That's closer, yeah.
That could be an important thing. Now, what one of the panelists judging it said was that in making the decision, the flyer... Oh, well, let me just get this right. Rebuked the argument, noting that unlike extramarital affairs or white supremacy, being trans is not a moral choice. And it says absolutely nothing about the moral views of the candidate.
Yeah.
Now, what the general consensus across the country is, being trans is like, it's something that you can't change. It's an attribute that you can't choose not to be. So like a sexuality or a race or ethnicity.
Yeah.
And these are broadly grounds that... You know, it's not somebody's fault that they're XYZ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And ergo, them being XYZ is not a judgment on their character. And I think that that bit is important because what the judge said was, and I quote, "In my view, the flyer is the modern version of a whites-only sign. It is an attempt to block the doors of government with a message that the political realm is for cisgendered people only."
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, by Walcott saying, Morgan Auger is pretending, her being trans means that she's just, it's a big lie and a whole scam, therefore she's unreliable, is saying, you know, somebody who has this attribute they can't change makes them inherently not fit for office. And the panelist in this case is drawing that comparison by saying it speaks to a time when people of color couldn't be in the office
on account of being
people of color. Exactly.
And the irony is that if he attacked Miss Auger on different grounds, saying that, like, don't vote for this person, they're endorsing a form of, you know, trans feminism that we don't want in office, I would still think the guy's a poopy butt, but, like, trying to dissuade people from voting for someone because of their ideals and what they want to bring to the office is fair. I mean, that's one of the things that you do during a debate. You say, don't vote for that person, they believe the following things. I would still think the guy's a jerk, but at least it would be like, that is what the domain of political debate is. That's a part of that field, and that would be okay. So, I mean, it's an issue of, like, he really went about this in literally the worst way possible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Bill Walcott hands out hate flyers no matter what time of day it is.
Yeah, yeah. He had a lot of issues as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most recently targeting LGBT rights. Now, you know, the argument that it was during an election, so anything you say is valid. You know, during an election... freedom of expression is most valuable in democracy at that time. And that was, it's a fair concern.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement with the caveat of so long as you're on topic.
But it's not an excuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the, in the decision that actually ruled in Morgana Scher's favor says that far from, and I quote, far from being an attempt to engage in enriching the policy debate, the expression contained in the flyers is intended to denigrate and humiliate Ms. Scher based on her gender identity and encourage voters not to support her party, not because of the quality of the ideas, but because of the support for trans people. Mm-hmm. So really it's saying, you know, don't vote for them because they have trans people, really is not that far from the whites only sign
exactly,
the comparison was made here. What's really interesting throughout this case is that Bill Walcott brought up so many arguments about why he should be able to do what he did.
Uh-huh.
Freedom of expression, freedom of religion. He's an evangelist.
Okay.
And there are protections in Canada in terms of people going out and as part of their faith, particularly I think it's the Lutheran Church, going and sort of converting. Think of like the Jehovah's Witnesses going door to door, where there is a belief that if they don't try and save your soul, that's on them.
Yeah.
So they have to really go door to door. So that's what he's argued. He's like, well, it's actually my God-given belief that absolutely. And Morgan Roger just hates the Bible. So clearly it's just a Bible-hating trans monstrosity. Yeah. And I'm in the right. Everyone else is wrong. But again, not right.
You are fully permitted to attack ideas, but he's not attacking ideas, he's attacking people. He's attacking whole segments of the population, which is a very, very different issue. I mean, there's even people within the trans community who disagree with a lot of the talking points of trans identity and trans rights. I mean, it's an ongoing discussion, and I think contributing to that discussion is completely fair. But that's not what he did.
No.
He just said, you are trans, ergo, GTFO. Like, it's not.
So what's important?
It's not constructive in any way.
So what's important here is Walcott and his team are making all of these arguments around freedom of religion. That my religion is to be a dick. I'm not directly quoting here. Mm-hmm. My religion is to be a dick, therefore I should be allowed to be a dick.
Okay.
You know, and the judge has said, well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
But
let's talk about the technicality.
Let's talk about this Supreme Court of Canada case called, what is it? Oh, it's Walcott. it's the Supreme Court of Canada case that you lost, Mr. Bill Walcott.
Yes. Which set the precedent that we're following now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really it. It is remarkable that during this case in BC, when he was attacking this trans candidate, he essentially made all of the same arguments that he made to the Supreme Court of Canada. And the Supreme Court of Canada said, yeah, you're right. The Saskatchewan Human Rights Code, which is what the court case in the Supreme Court was, does infringe your freedom of expression and religion. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It does do that. But. It is demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. So yes, it does. But unfortunately for you, it's actually a reasonable limitation on expression of freedom of expression and religious thought. So it's like, yeah, you know, you can have your own religion. You can say what you like, but you cannot incite hatred.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty reasonable line in the sand that the whole of Canada has agreed to.
Yeah.
You know?
And if the pamphlets were literally like, don't vote for this person, they are trans, I mean, that is blocking someone based on one of the protected classes.
Absolutely. Now, Bill Walcott argued that he can't possibly have incited violence because there was no violence.
Well, I mean,
and actually, that's the thing with the law. There doesn't have to have been violence for you to have incited violence.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a terrifying situation to be in because we're living in a time where trans people are murdered just because they're trans.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really see it in Canada so much, but we do see it in the States. And our southern neighbors are pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it unnerved Morgan. Morgan actually consulted with the Vancouver police and was required to notify the Vancouver Hate Crimes Unit anytime Morgan was planning to speak publicly. So the police also took his hate flyers so seriously that they believed that there could be a potential breach of the peace and required that they be kept in the loop. So even though there was no violence as a result of his incitement to violence, doesn't mean that the incitement wasn't there.
The call to violence and the violence are two separate crimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they Morgan took him to court saying that they incited violence, the pamphlets. She won, and Bill Walcott lost because, surprise, surprise, the pamphlets did, in fact, incite violence.
The documents that I read also indicated he was, let's say, an unprofessional individual while in court, which never helps your case.
Yeah.
Like, if you're brought in front of a judge, don't be snarky.
Just don't be a dick.
Yeah.
And so she was awarded...
Because if you lose, they're going to nail you... As much as they can, and if you win, you're not going to win by much.
So Morgan Auger was awarded $35,000 for injury to her dignity, feelings, and self-respect, and that was on the higher end of what's been awarded in that court before. It's not the highest ever, but it was certainly exceptional in its value and extent of value. So that's the. You printed hate flyers, incited hate crime, you've injured this person's dignity and respect, hand over $35,000 and stop being a dick. So that was the start of the decision. Now, absolutely right.
Does this set a precedent in BC or in all of Canada?
Not really. Well, all case law sets a precedent
for all of Canada. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So this will be cited in ongoing cases moving forward. But what's really interesting is that the tribunals, all tribunals across Canada, are very limited in what they can do. And one of the things they can do is say, behave, be quick about it. Because one of the things, tribunals don't have a lot of time. They don't have a lot of money. They're not very well-funded organizations. So in order to make sure that they can see the most number of cases, there is a pressure to actually be expedient. You can't dick about and take forever.
Right.
You're wasting court time and, so they're like, get on with it is a pretty key component.
Mm-hmm.
But there's very little the courts, the tribunals can do to actually get people to behave or to be efficient.
Well, they can set precedent so that when the law needs to be applied, even in the field by police, like they can change what the precedent is so that people can react more effectively, more quickly.
Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about in the court proceedings, in the room.
Okay.
So I do not believe that with tribunals you can be found in contempt of court because it's not a court.
Oh.
So there's very little, they don't have much of a stick to hit you with to get you to behave during the tribunal
series. Except for money.
And one of the only ways they can do it is punitive damages.
Yeah.
So Bill Walcott decided that the appropriate attire for a human rights hearing where he's been accused of distributing hate flyers against a trans person, that the most appropriate outfit that he could come up with was a full-faced photo of Morgan Auger on a T-shirt, essentially saying, you're a dude.
Yeah.
And he wore this T-shirt every day. And the panel goes, come here a minute. Is wearing this T-shirt your best idea you've had today?
Oh.
And the guy's like, well, it's my freedom of speech. And they're like, in a tribunal, in a courtroom, you have to be respectful. Everybody has the right to have their case dealt with respect. No matter what side of the issue you are, everybody deserves to have that discussion happen respectfully. And Walcott was like, I want to wear my T-shirt. So he actually was found to have been disrespectful, surprise, of Morgana Gere as a result of the t-shirt. In addition, posted on Facebook, did podcast interviews, posted on his website calling Morgana Gere a lesbian lawyer who's, and it wasn't complimentary. There was...
It just occurred to me, through all of this, I have no idea what Morgana Gere's policies are, if she runs for a party. Like, at no point was political policy platform or idea brought up, which is, that is the reason normally why you would attack a politician.
Yeah,
which
is, but no, this is just because who they are. Yeah. So,
I've seen a couple people run for office where I know them personally, and I really hope they lose because I think they're an idiot. Mm. But it's because I think they're an idiot and I don't think they'd be good at the job. It's not because
of, you know,
who they are or anything like that. It's, and I think you know who I'm talking about as well, where it's like, ooh, they won? Really? Really? That person? Ooh. But yeah.
So the panel wrote that Bill Walcott denies Miss Auger's very existence as a woman, associates her with serious criminality, ridicules her, and likens her access to the tribunal as child's whining. So essentially said that because she asked the tribunal to intervene, she was whining like a child.
Yeah, she was whining to the state to intervene or something like that.
So they go on to say, this is not something that anyone accessing the tribunal's process should be forced to endure.
Yeah.
And it is shocking the amount of things that he did. The t-shirt is just maybe the most glaring obvious. He attacked the tribunal members. He put up hate pamphlets about the tribunal during a hearing to the tribunal about putting up hate pamphlets. I mean, it is astonishing. He's an idiot.
Or a sociopath.
It's hard to say. We're not qualified medical professionals.
Yeah.
We cannot make a decision on whether or not he's an idiot. But the evidence suggests...
Actually, idiot is a medical term, strictly speaking, yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah. So anyway, the BC Human Rights Tribunal, surprisingly or unsurprisingly, found not only did he actually distribute hate pamphlets that were hateful, surprise, surprise, using the precedent set by... his own loss at
his
the Supreme
own past
Court.
Case, yes.
They did found him guilty. They awarded Morgana Gere $35,000. But what's really shocking is that they also fined him $20,000 for being a dick.
Yeah.
So that's all misbehavior, disrespectful.
In the tribunal, in general. Because if you could get fined just for
being a dick, my God.
You know, we wouldn't have any shortfalls anymore.
That's true. We have the most well-funded government in...
Yeah, I mean, dental and optical could get covered.
Yeah, just fine people for being a dick.
Yeah.
No, so they fined him, and that $20,000 is actually the biggest fine levied by the tribunal in about 20 years.
Is that including inflation?
No, I didn't match it to the dollar amount, but it is the biggest figure levied as a fine in 20 years. It is astonishing. We're going to jump to a song, and then we'll be back in just a few moments.
What song are we jumping to?
This is Hang With Me by Robin.
Robin! Robin's one of those musicians that, like, for some reason, the only people I know in North America who know about Robin are gay men and people who are friends with gay men and people who listen to Eurovision who are mostly gay men. Or friends with gay men.
Yeah. Not exclusively, but there is definitely...
Which isn't to say that if you already know that Robin exists, that you're definitely a gay man, but it's
just... Or friends with a gay man.
Or friends with a gay man.
But all of our listeners are friends with a gay man, because they're all our friends.
Aww.
That's so true.
Fall recklessly, headlessly in love with me, 'cause it's gonna be drift astray. At a touch and at a place, will you tell me to my face? Feel like you can hang with me. And if you do me right, I'm gonna do right by you. And if you keep it tight, I'm gonna confide in you. I know what's on your mind, there will be time for that too.
When they first opened, and they were the Canadian Lesbian and Gay Archives, and a lot of it was just a matter of trying to maintain the history of the community in Canada.
You know, in the 70s, there was a lot of fighting for human rights, a lot of people passing away from HIV and AIDS,
in the 80s
and 90s.
Yeah, that was more 80s and 90s. 70s, I think there's only like a dozen people in Canada who had HIV. But, I mean, still, there's no reporting. But
there were hate crimes.
And whenever events happen, like, people, it wouldn't get reported. So at that time, the main concern was lesbian and gay rights. But then, you know, later on, bisexual got tacked on. But then they would have to rebrand the organization, and that's an expensive process. The trans gender non-conforming identities have been around for as long as humanity. But the word trans and the modern conception of what it means to be trans really only came in the mid-70s. So for that to not be tacked on just yet, for historical reasons, kind of makes sense. But then the 90s came around and the 2000s, and there's just ongoing, like, we should probably update. But the thing is that if it's a historical site, which the archives kind of are, maintaining that historical name kind of makes sense. But there came a point where it was just ridiculous. They were like 30 years out of date. So they rebranded themselves the Archives, spelt the
capital A
Spanish way, actually.
Oh, okay.
Archives, that's how you spell the Spanish word for archives.
Oh.
I don't think that was on purpose.
Probably not.
Because the QUI part of the Archives is more for the queer, but they didn't, they were tempted to put in the word queer, but they also recognized that historically the word queer was a word of oppression and hate.
Yeah, and as an archive, it's relevant. Yeah,
they have documentation where the word queer is used pejoratively, and so they're very aware. And there's also, like, even now there's an urban-rural divide, and you could even say, like, working-class inner-city neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Queer can still be used as a pejorative. So they were very, they didn't want to use it directly, but they didn't want to ignore the fact that, like, you know, queer academics exist as a topic. So they kind of split the difference by calling it just the Archives and putting the QU and spelling it the Spanish way, because why not?
I think it's great. They, you know, essentially what they said was, we have a quote here from the director, Regan Swanson, who said that the rebrand was to show the LGBTQ+ communities that we are actively trying to make our space and collections more inclusive.
Yes.
So, you know, essentially the whole thing was that, you know, the stories, the historical artifacts that are being collected
mm-hmm.
aren't just of lesbians and gays.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's bi and trans yeah. are all in that.
In the 70s and 80s, there wasn't much to collect beyond the gay and lesbian experience because, I mean, people weren't as organized except for the gays and lesbians. And later on, as other community groups like Gender Mosaic here in Ottawa and other such organizations started forming, like, the amount of information worthy of holding onto expanded, and it was a full retrofit. So when they're saying they're making the building more accessible, they're not just talking about accessible to identities, they're also talking about physically accessible. They put in an elevator and a ramp so that it's physically accessible. They put in a lot of digital archives because not everyone is a trained archivist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like informatically accessible. If you're looking for information, it's easier to find it. Because for the longest time, if you needed information, you would have to pay one of the archivists to find it for you.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people were happy to pay the fee because they were supporting the organization. But it also made a financial barrier
yeah.
to people who were trying to do historical research and maybe didn't have a lot at their disposal. And even a couple times we asked them if we ever wanted to refer to them, they said, you know, if you... Sometimes, like, people would make a donation, even if they get volunteers to do the research for you,
mm-hmm.
they still request that you make a donation, and this was when we were speaking with Jade, this was, like, 4 years ago, and she said, like, no one says no.
Mm-hmm.
People make a donation because they recognize the importance of it. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, now, anyway, point is, you don't need that any, well, there's still going to be jobs for the archivist, because some of the information is hard to find, or it's mm-hmm. under...
Well, to give you a sense yeah. of the scale,
yeah.
they have 5,000 3D artifacts, 20,000 periodicals, 20,000 books, 10,000 periodicals detailing queer life. They are the Ooh. Largest Canadian collector of queer identity and life in Canada,
mm-hmm.
which is huge.
Yeah.
And so this effort to launch as the Archives, I don't know if it should be pronounced Archives or Archives, it's probably just archives.
I'd say archives.
The archives, like quiche.
No, because that's how you say it in Spanish.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, the archives, the Canadian LGBT Q2+ archives, has had a rebrand. And we are excited for it. Now, one of the things that came up is that a petition was lodged with the federal government to introduce... a ban on conversion therapy nationwide.
Right, okay.
The
multiple, I think, have been attempted, yeah.
The federal government kicked it back to the provinces, saying this isn't a federal issue. There's laws that already cover it, and if healthcare are doing conversion therapy, the provinces need to deal with that. Essentially saying, we see your call for national ban on conversion therapy, which has been called by the World Health Organization yeah. torture. You know, we see that call for a ban and we kick it over to the provinces, not our problem.
Now, to be fair to the feds, the Canadian Constitution is written in such a way where a lot of things that you would anticipate being taken care of at the federal level gets booted back down to the provinces.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot like education, the power grid, safe drinking water. There's a lot of issues that having a national plan would make sense. But because of the way the Constitution is written, they're expected to boot it back down to the provinces. Now, that said, this being, because it's filed under healthcare, all they need to do is say the federal Canadian government does not acknowledge this as being valid healthcare, which they've done with other things where...
Well, it already isn't valid healthcare.
Well, yeah.
So Randy Poisson-O, who is the LGBT Secretariat for... the Liberal government, the special advisor to the Prime Minister on LGBTQ2 issues, he did a massive 10-tweet thread, essentially reiterating the same position the government released, but adding a bit more detail.
Okay.
So, you know, he essentially says that kidnapping, the criminal offense of kidnapping, the criminal offense of forcible confinement, and the criminal offense of assault all count. So if you are being forced to do conversion therapy, the fact that you're being forced to do anything
yeah.
is the crime. He goes on to say that they could be charged with fraud, and this just speaks to your point.
Yeah.
Where the fees that are being charged with conversion therapy services, would be fraudulent.
Yeah.
Because the services have been discredited as actual anything. Like the psychological associations have said it don't work.
Yeah, yeah.
So to charge you money for it would be fraud. Which is an interesting take to have. And then the willful promotion of hatred against an identifiable group, which is one of the hate crimes conditions, also they reckon can be used against conversion therapy. There's also additional rules protecting minors.
Okay, I was going to say, because there's a lot of things that you can force a minor to do when they don't want to. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about, like, going to school, for example. Like, going to school, getting dentistry done. Like, as a parent, if a kid doesn't want to see their dentist...
Or eat their broccoli.
Like, you as a parent have limited legal ability to force them. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to hold them down and ram it in their mouth, that's assault or, you know, some kind of...
Too far.
Yeah, it's too far and there's probably a crime being broken. But, I mean, having special provisions for minors is very important because there's a lot of loopholes because in Canada we kind of treat children as being the possessions of their parents and not as being tiny drunk adults who don't know better yet, which is... I mean, that's... Most people in my family just treat children as... actual autonomous adults who are just drunk and stupid, which, you know, if you've ever hung out with a 6-year-old, that's a pretty good description. Yeah. But
so I don't know, what do you think of Randy Bosseneau's thread here, essentially saying, you know, get them with fraud, get them with kidnapping, you know, do you think that, you know, pointing to these desperate different parts of criminal law and saying, look, the law's already covered, it's not our problem. We've already dealt with it by effectively saying, look, here's the criminal code. Throw it at them.
It's kind of a mostly yes, but the ways where I disagree are very significant. So things like acupuncture. Not only is there no medical evidence showing that acupuncture works, but there is medical evidence showing that acupuncture does not work. And not only that, but acupuncture is banned in China. As
I think you mentioned this last week.
Non-effective pseudoscience. Yeah,
I'm still waiting for the hate mail from the
interests. But so if we're going to say you're not allowed to do conversion therapy because we know it doesn't work, then why aren't we doing the same thing with a whole bunch of other pseudoscientific medical practices? Which isn't, you know, we should therefore let conversion therapy slide. That's really just like...
Let's be clear here for the acupuncturists in the room. Conversion therapy has been deemed to not work by nearly every psychological and psychiatrical association in the developed world. Yeah. It is resoundingly said, World Health Organization, the whole shebang. There is not, I do not believe, the body of voices against acupuncture is anywhere near as robust as the body of voices against
conversion therapy. They view it as a waste of your time and money. That it doesn't do harm. That's the difference.
It isn't considered torture.
It doesn't do harm. Exactly. Yeah. The other thing is, like, I think there's an education portion here. So as much as he's right that there's a half dozen other laws that cover the same thing, do people know that? Do minors who are put in this position know that? Do people who are running these conversion therapy services, are they aware of how many laws are or might be broken when anyone comes through their door? So, I mean, there's an education portion here that they should take more seriously at the federal level, because there are a whole bunch.
They should deal with it in the Federal Ministry of Education.
Yeah. Wah, wah. You got me with my own joke.
So, you know, I actually take umbrage with Boisson's point here that municipalities and provinces share the responsibility to prevent acts of conversion therapy from taking place. If your community or province has not yet banned conversion therapy, push them to do more. And I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I get it. You're technically right. There is a shared responsibility.
From a constitutional point of view, he's not
this
wrong.
This is passing the buck.
This is
saying, you know, we do not believe this is good. Here's all of these random laws that, you know, if you can convince your local police department to actually apply, Who has ever been arrested promoting, you know, hate crimes is one of the least prosecuted crimes in the criminal code.
I'm pretty sure that in the 1920s and 30s, it was the feds who put pressure on the provinces to modernize labor rights as a result of the union movement. Like, I think it was the provinces dug their heel in because the provinces can do that. And then the feds were like, come on, guys, come on, seriously. So I'm pretty sure there's probably a historian out there who's like, well, actually, here's all the ways in which you're wrong. But if you say any historical event in two sentences or less, you're probably not accurate. Mm-hmm. So that's cheating.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Because we are playing out with Mahmoud's Soldi, and this is an Italian, but this is the Italian entry to Eurovision, and I like it because it is not very Eurovision. I'd say about 80% of it sounds the same.
It has a sound, it has a feel, yeah.
And you have some that are super Eurovision-y. I think the one we played last year is like a super example of a Eurovision song. And then you get these ones. Last year in 2018, there was that country song from Norway that was just...
No, it was... Sweden or somewhere. It sounded like the third to last song in a Disney princess movie.
No, that was Sweden. I was thinking of... There was a guy that studied in Nashville, and actually the country song was a part of it.
Okay, yeah.
So this is Soldi by Mahmoud, which is like a R&B song.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very run-of-the-mill as an R&B song, but it's more that it just doesn't feel like Eurovision. And we promote Eurovision a lot for no reason.
And we'll be back next week. I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. Thanks for listening. In periferia fa molto caldo. Mamma, stai tranquillo, sto arrivando. Te la prenderai per un bugiardo. Ti sembrava amore, ma era altro. Beve champagne sotto Ramadan. TV, danno Jackie Chan, fuma narghile, mi chiede come va, mi chiede come va, come va, come va, sai già come va, come va, come va, penso più veloce per capire se domani tu mi fregherai, non ho tempo per chiarire perché solo ora so cosa sei, è difficile stare al mondo quando perdi l'orgoglio. Pensavi solo ai soldi, soldi, come se avessi avuto soldi, soldi, dimmi se ti manco te ne fotti, fotti, mi chiedevi come va, come va, come va, adesso come va, come va, come va, ciò che devi dire non l'hai detto, tradire una pallottola nel petto, prendi tutta la tua carità, a casa ma lo sai che lo sa su una sedia lei mi chiederà mi chiede come va come va come va sai già come va come va come va penso più veloce per capire se domani tu mi fregherai non ho tempo per chiarire perché solo ora so cosa sei.